It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello everyone, Forest Focus. It's that time of the week where we do our best to answer your questions with topics including potentially getting points back, Nuno's long-term future, and the potential introduction of a Premier League spending cap. Joining me to discuss all that and a few more topics is Reds fan Pete Blackburn. Morning, Pete. Afternoon, Pete. In fact, how are you doing?
Good afternoon. Yeah, very well. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. Good to have you with us. And second guest today, sporting a very good jumper, is Mikey Clark. Mikey, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great, thanks. Good to see you both.
Good to see you. The jumper is, it says he knows the club, which is exploding heads, if anyone's seen that. Well, on Twitter, Sports Horn is the, not to advertise another podcast too much, but Sports Horn is what it's from. Mikey is a big fan, and I listen as well. It's very funny. A spoof sports podcast, a la Talk Radio, taking the mickey out of Talk Radio and Joey Barton and people like that. So, yeah, it's very good. Right. We will get into your questions shortly. Just one thing on top of that to discuss briefly is the kind of independent VAR panel's ruling on the three appeals that we had against Everton, which obviously kicked up so much furore. It ruled that, in their opinion, only the third one on Hudson-Odoi, where he went in through on goal and Ashley Young pulled him down. That one was ruled as it should have been a penalty. And the other two was like split decisions saying they weren't. So basically, the panel said one out of three was a penalty. What's your general take on what the ruling was, Mikey?
Yeah, probably fair. I think I probably agree with it. I think the third one, the Hudson-Odoi challenge, that was just a blatant penalty. Still angry about that. I think Temp said it the other day on here. He's still angry too. So am I. I think a lot of people are. I think the other two, quite subjective. When I watched the game initially, the challenge on Reina, I didn't think was. But then you look at it again, you think, well, there's lots of them that have been given. So probably could have gone either way. Very subjective. The second one, the handball one. Again, my initial thought was penalty. But I can probably see why it hasn't been given. But then you look and you think, well, there's loads of examples of that. The third one is absolutely blatant stonewall penalty. I still can't get my head around why that wasn't given. So am I surprised at the panel ruling? No, not really. It probably leads itself to the conclusion that a lot of these decisions that go to VAR are still very, very subjective. And that's probably why they've come up with it. So even still, we were denied at least one clear penalty. And it's just another of the long list of apology letters that we have. We're going to have another room in the museum for them soon, aren't we? But, yeah, there we go. So, yeah, not surprised, Matt.
Richard Smith points out three out of the five panel rules, it was the handball was a penalty. I think it's a mixture of former players, someone from the PGMOL, someone from the Premier League, and one other person. So, yeah, what's your take on it?
Pretty similar to Mikey, I think. As far as I see it, the sort of big, really controversial issue is the third one. And the really controversial part about it is it not being overturned by VAR because it was an absolute banker for your clear and obvious error review. So as I see it, referees make decisions and sometimes they're wrong. He was definitely wrong on that one. And there was a clear opportunity for the VAR to step in and change that. It would have been the perfect use of VAR as I see it, and I don't really understand why that hasn't happened. And so I think they're right to identify that. The other two I think are they're slightly sketchy. They're not 10 out of 10 penalties, and I can understand why they weren't given on the day to an extent. I think if I was referee, I probably would have given all three on balance, but I can understand that some wouldn't, and he didn't.
I think I've fixed Pete's audio. It was a little echo. He's in a room in Scotland, and they only have big rooms in Scotland, so that's why. But I've managed to adjust accordingly. I think people asking about the audio being released, I don't think we'll get it publicly. We should get the third one, because that's the one that counts. I agree with the chaps. I think the second one just shows that we don't know what handball is, really. I think as Forest fans, we all thought it was a penalty, but there's so much. Too many other people who didn't to make it completely clear and obvious. But the third one is the one that is pretty unacceptable, I would say, that one hasn't been given. Thanks very much to Kevin Pride for becoming a member. Appreciate the support, Kevin, and anyone else who has signed up to support us. Right, let's get into these questions then. Lots of good ones as ever. Some of them overlap a little bit, and some were submitted by multiple people, but I'll throw them to the chaps, and some of them we've had before, but people keep asking them, so I'll ask them again, because I think it's the kind of stuff that our opinions move on with over time. But we'll start with the points deduction. Paul Morley asks, how do we think the appeal decision might affect the mood in the camp ahead of the weekend? It could be a massive lift, or it could reinforce the world's against us sentiment that was evidence after the Everton game. Mikey, we were talking yesterday, there's a lot of talk about us getting 2 points back. I don't want to entertain it too much, because I think my big worry is that the players start thinking we're getting 2 points back, and then if we don't, it becomes a knock on them, really. Any thoughts on that and how this might play out?
Yeah, that's the whisper, isn't it? But I think the reality is, I don't think anybody knows yet. So, but I think the good thing is that today, probably tomorrow, and they'll know. So I guess the question was around, will it affect the mood in the camp? Absolutely. Of course it will. You know, they're human beings, and to be, you know, even a point back gives us a bit of a cushion to Burnley because of the goal difference. So they would almost have to overturn to get two better results than us. 2 points back would be absolutely huge for us right now. So I think it affects the mood, just as it probably affected the mood negatively when it was announced. You know, there's rumours of Nuno not being particularly happy when that news dropped. And I'm sure a lot of players mirrored that response, as did a lot of fans. So if we get half of those points back, it will be huge. Whether it then affects the preparation and the tactics and the thinking behind preparing for Saturday, I very much doubt, because I'm sure now there's 3 games left. I'm sure the management team and even the players have it in their heads what they need to do now. So whether it is that we have a slight cushion that we have now, or maybe a slightly bigger cushion, I think it's irrelevant. I think they'll be working on team shape now. They'll be working on Sheffield United's threats, how we want to set up. Do we keep the same system that worked really well in Man City, or do we go back to what we've been doing before and hopeful of, say, a Fulham at home performance? They're the things they need to work through. But I don't think that will be affected. I think that will already be decided. Obviously, throwing things around injuries, a few players linked off, that might change the thinking in terms of how we line up. But I think it won't affect the plans. It won't affect who's marking who at set pieces. Hopefully somebody this time will be good. So it won't affect any of that, but it might affect the mood. And of course, it'll affect the mood, because the human beings, crikey, think what we're going to think, say, tomorrow, if the news drops and we've got 2 points back. And you look at that table and it looks a whole lot different, knowing who we've got on Saturday. And if we can beat them, what a position we could be in. So it will give them a lift. Of course it will. But I'm a bit like you, Matt. Until we have it in concrete, all these whispers could be not true. Until we have it in concrete, we just got to get on and prepare, you know, and so have we. And I'm really looking forward to Saturday. I think it's pivotal. I know Pete don't like the must-win thing, mate, but I think it is.
I'm going to ask Pete the question. He's going to say, I don't know, but it's probably going to be the answer. But I couldn't help yesterday when Mikey dropped in the WhatsApp group saying, soft rumours that we're getting 2 points back. I did get a bit carried away and a bit giddy. Had you heard that, Mikey, or was that just from the Talk Sport chat and stuff?
I'm in a few groups and a few people have said that could be. And it's not the first time I've heard that as well, like a few weeks ago. But I genuinely don't know. So whether it's whispers or who knows, but I think I didn't even realise they'd said something on the radio, and I put the radio on and I couldn't hear it. So I'm hoping there's no smoke without fire, and I'm hoping that comes to fruition, because even a point back, Matt, would be absolutely crucial at this stage of the season. So let's hope that panel have come down in our favour, and fingers crossed we get some good news in the next 24 hours.
Pete's not a kind of get giddy, get carried away guy, but do you even get a little bit excited about this, Pete, that we might get something back?
Not at the moment, no. Trying to think how to word this to be slightly cautious, but there have at previous points during this process been whispers and leaks that have reached some of us from, I think, both the Premier League and the Football Club, and I've heard none of those as of yet, and I'm not sure what the sourcing is of these sort of smoke signals that are knocking about, but I've heard nothing of the sort, and I'm not convinced that the Premier League even know what the punishment sanction is at this point. So personally, no, I'm not getting remotely carried away. I think it's probably all talk radio type chat that has just sort of built. So no, I'm not getting carried away, but I totally agree that any positive outcome from this hearing would be extraordinary in terms of the impact it could have on our season, particularly if you tie it together with a win at Sheffield United on the weekend. You put those two things together and that's potentially pretty transformative, especially if you also add in a result for Luton that's favourable for us. It could be a real change in the way the season's playing out. So at that point, I would get pretty giddy if all those things fell in line. But as things stand, I've got no reason to believe that the points thing is playing out as some of those whispers have suggested. I'm not sure that hearing has been published or handed to anybody yet. I'm not going to get carried away.
No, I think that's fair. The only thing I was thinking is, this is probably naive, but TalkSport presenters probably shouldn't be saying that on air unless they've got something that makes them pretty confident. But I guess maybe they just threw it out there because they're not just talking to a Forest audience. So I think Pete's wise to hang fire on it, but I guess we can't help but get a little bit excited because, you know, every point does count now. Let's move on.
I think we might be over.
Go on.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I think we might be slightly overestimating the sort of journalistic integrity of TalkSport with that sort of chat.
That's literally what I thought you were going to say when you unmuted yourself. Right. Question from Gary McBride. This is probably the only other off-field question before we get into on-field matters. About new spending cap rules, do they make a difference? Have they gone far enough? The talk is that it's going to be 4.5 times the income from TV broadcasting of the bottom team in the Premier League, which would help Forest much more than the other proposed ones tied into directly into revenue and amortisation of contracts. But it's still not completely clear, I guess, Pete, exactly what it's going to be. It hasn't been voted through, so we don't really know. It's another question we're in a bit of a holding pattern, but in principle, it looks like these would be more beneficial to Forest than certainly the current rules and other potential proposals.
That would be the case if they were going to be in isolation. But as I understand it, the proposal is for these to run concurrently with the other proposals.
Yeah, which I don't understand. I don't understand how that works. That was what confused me.
I think the point of it would essentially is that it is, well, as Danscape has just said in the comments, he's described as a backstop. So I think the idea, and it's a perfectly principled and well thought out idea, apparently from Steve Parrish is the talk. I think he's Kieran Maguire described him as the shop steward for the 14 clubs outside the Big Six. So often brings forward a lot of this stuff. I think the idea is that it basically places a hard limit right now on the level of inequality that we can have in the Premier League. So the idea is that it can't get any worse than this. So the top six teams will be tied to having that same amount to play with that they do now, because essentially none of them have broken it apart from potentially Chelsea with this massive massive spending spree that they've been on. So it shouldn't actually have any great impact on any of the teams, but it should also mean that it doesn't get worse from here. And that if football changes and if more money pours into the game or into those big six teams, if they get their way with various breakaway ventures and things, that they won't be able to apply even further inequality on the league, which I think is a good thing. But to answer the original question, I don't think they will make much of a difference. And no, they don't go far enough. And yes, we need them to be stronger if we want to reign in the big six. Problem is, though, that those 14 clubs that have to vote for these things to happen, they will start falling away as you try and have stronger measures, because some of them will benefit from the measures and some won't. So you have teams, you know, so it's an awkward alliance. You'd have teams like Newcastle or whatever in that list who are going to want to be able to spend an awful lot more money than Forest are, and will be wary of you know, strengthening those rules. So I don't think it is going to make a great deal of difference, to be honest. But I welcome the sort of vague notion that things can't get worse from here, and that's what the rules are sort of protecting. So I'm sort of okay with that. I mean, I guess the argument that a lot of people will have at this point is that, you know, people say football has sort of gone down this route now of sort of unfettered finance and capitalism. There's nothing you can do about it. You're just a consumer or a legacy fan. Amid the sort of endless corporate greed fest, I guess. I mean, I personally disagree with that, because nothing ever happens unless good, interested people fight against the status quo when it's bad. And that's how you make change. So I hope there are increasing voices of dissent, and I hope we get more work along this sort of path. It's hard to see it at the moment, and I don't have a solution for FFP that makes sense for everyone. It's complicated and difficult. But yeah. To answer that original question, I don't think it's going to make a great difference, but it's not going to make things worse. And it does provide a bit of a hard stop at this point if those rules are stuck by.
Oh, that's a bit depressing. I was getting a bit excited, but yeah, there you go. Probably doesn't change the status quo too much. Anything to add, Mikey, on that before we move on?
I like Pete's. I always knew you were a punk, Pete, at heart, with those views, a bit like me. No, I think it's I think Pete hit the nail on the head. I always look at who votes against these things. And I think there were three or four clubs that voted against them, and were all the top clubs. Man City, Man U, I think Chelsea was one. So that
Aston
kind of
Villa was the other one.
Probably tells you something, doesn't it? Really, without having to go into the weeds of it. So what we do know is that the system is just fundamentally broken, I think. So anything they can come up with which might get their noses out of joint a little bit, I'm all for. But I'd need to read the kind of specifics on it. But there needs to be some sort of cap and some sort of guidelines. And then they need to be clear for all clubs, because, you know, we just spoke previously about, do we get points back? That's because you're working in a guideline and framework that just isn't clear. You're just making it up as they go along. So whatever they decide needs to be all signed onto, all very clear, no misconception, and everybody follows it. And if you don't, you get punished. So whatever that looks like. But the fact that the top clubs voted against it tells me a lot.
Before we get into on-field matters, quick word for our sponsors, of course, the Trent Navigation, looking ahead to the last day of the season. If you're not going to Burnley, then make sure you head down to the Trent Navigation and the Big Shed to catch all the drama and the jeopardy in the 4 p.m. kickoffs. They've got a huge range of beers, including plenty of cask ales. All televised games on UK TV will be shown. It hasn't been announced yet if we're one of them, but if it's all on the line, I suspect it will be. So you might be able to watch the Forest game as well. And, of course, the barbecue food court is open. It's a Sunday. You can get Sunday roasts and much, much more. Right, let's go back to on-field matters. This is a regular question. Every one of these, we get the same sort of question around the manager. Sean Murray, Greg and Lee Tilson all asked it this time. If we stay up, do you think Nuno will be coach next season? Slightly ironically, Mikey, I think it was yourself put in a WhatsApp chat that I'm in, asking that very same question about where we're at on it. Where are you at on it as we sit here with three games to go?
Personally, and I'm not going to lie, and I know I'm probably against the grain here, but I don't think so. So I think, you look at Nuno's record. Okay, so I think he's got 16 points since he come in, which isn't great. I think it's the same as Luton and Burnley which kind of tells you why we haven't managed to pull away from the iffy start that we had under Steve Cooper. I think it's genuinely conceded or accepted, should I say, that the style of football is more pleasing on the eye, and I would concur with that. I think we are more front foot. We do try and score more goals. But at the same time, we have become very, very weak and very flaky at the back. Not to say we weren't before, because obviously we've been struggling since we got in this league. And those same issues aren't being fixed. So we said a couple of weeks ago that it's very, very easy, very simple to fix a set pieces. Yet we've let in 8 in the last 10 games, 23 all season. I think a third of the goals we've let in have been set pieces, worst in the league. I'm not just saying that because we had this problem under Cooper. So for all the good stuff in terms of the playing style, and I do enjoy watching us, I'm not going to say I don't. I like some of the teams he puts out most of the time. I just think that this season's taken a bit of a toll on him since he came. You know, his demeanour looks very down. And I think you just got to ask the question, does he even want to be here? So if we get relegated, I genuinely can't see him being here at all. And if we stay up, we probably just need an honest conversation in terms of, does he want to continue this project? If so, what does pre-season look like? What's his view on recruitment? Can he work alongside, you know, his mate Mendes and obviously Marinakis? And can we get a more joined up thinking and joined up approach in the players that we bring in and ship out? Bearing in mind the structure and the governance that we have to work in might change a little bit. So there's all that. But I think these next three games will be telling. If we go down, he won't be here. If we stay, I think it's a toss of a coin. And if you're asking me, I'd say no. So I think whatever happens, we will start next season with a new manager. And that's my honest, heartfelt opinion. And I'm not sure Pete agrees with me, because I think he might be on the other side. But I think genuinely, the people that I speak to, a lot of people do have my opinion. And I think for all the good attacking intent and for all the positivity you see, certainly at home, I'm not sure we've made that step on since the manager change. I've just got to be honest.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'll say what I said in a WhatsApp chat. I'm still pretty torn on it because I think he's got a tough hand with AFCON, with injuries, with the points deduction, with all the VAR stuff. I think it's a pretty difficult environment to work in, and I'm not convinced. I thought Cooper was a good manager as well, so I'm not sure. Unless there's a really elite manager out there, I think it's a tough environment to find someone much better. But if there is someone out there, I'd welcome it. And I feel like we need some continuity at the club and in the manager's department. And also we need some stability to, you know, promote an environment to succeed, no matter who's the manager. And that comes down mostly to recruitment, I think. We need to get that right. And then getting the right manager will go in tandem. I don't think the next three games should necessarily decide Nuno's fate. We've had enough games witnessed to know what we're probably getting with Nuno. I think the question is, what players are we going to have next season? Will they be better? And then obviously the set piece problem needs to be solved by those players and perhaps with a tweak in the coaching staff. But we can't go into next season with the same issue. So I'm sitting on the fence there, I must admit. But yeah, what do you think, Pete?
I think I agree with an awful lot of what you've just said, to be honest, Matt. We spent so much time on this podcast and as fans moaning about the situation that Forest have been in through various stages of the season. So we've had points deduction looming, points deduction applied, all that mess off the pitch. We've had AFCON, which was horrendous and decimated the starting lineup. We've had incredible refereeing and VAR decisions that we bang on about endlessly. It's pretty hard not to take all that stuff into account when you're considering Nuno's position at the club. And I mean, we've put an awful lot of weight on that stuff, and it feels to me like we should probably put a fair bit of weight on it when we're making that judgment as well. Look, I'm not sold on him for a few reasons. Firstly, I don't have a relationship with him like I had with the previous manager, and I just think that's just the way it was always going to be. But also, Nuno's not that sort of guy. He doesn't seem to be desperate to work on that side of things, and that's absolutely fine. I don't think that's necessarily an issue, but it plays into my sort of bias and my thinking about it to a degree. So I don't have a great warmth to him, but when I think about this in a sort of practical, analytical sense, I think about all those things he's had to deal with, plus the fact that this is not a stable working environment for any manager. I mean, Steve Cooper will have plenty to tell you about that, I'm sure. And then if you also add in the high points under Nuno, we have had some serious victories against really good football teams. Against Man City, I think he showed us something different. He showed us an ability to be flexible and to cope with an incredibly impressive football team who perhaps didn't have their best day, but you know, who's to say what level of that was us and what was them. But he showed something a bit different. He's been pretty rigid with his sort of structure and his way of playing so far. But he showed something different and an ability to be flexible and respond to another team. And like I say, when it's been good, it's been bright. We've played with real intent, and we've taken the game to teams that are better than us. And I love that. On the other side, when it's been bad, it's been pretty grim. The mistakes are grisly, and the set piece situation is horrendous. So you know, there are arguments on both sides, but I think realistically, we have to become a football club that gives managers some sense of stability and a working environment that allows them to succeed at some point. And he hasn't even had a summer at the football club. You know, he's come into a relegation fight plus an awful lot of other horrendous stuff to deal with. And I just don't see how it's really feasible for me to be calling a manager to be sacked with all of that context. So I'm not going to. The other side of it is, I think the question was actually, will he still be, not whether I want him to be. I think it's fair to say that the ownership will be deeply, deeply unhappy about the situation. People describe them as ambitious, and you might think that their ambitions are unrealistic sometimes, but they want an awful lot better than this. I don't think they've always gone about delivering it in the right way, but we know that they want better than this, and they won't be standing for this for long. So I think they will have itchy fingers, and that is a concern. The thing that reassures me is that the owners at this football club have not been shy about talking to other managers in the past and trying to think about making a change, but I've heard very little of that. So I think it may be the case that they haven't set their minds to making a change as of yet. So yeah, I guess in summary, I think he probably needs to be given a chance and hopefully a more stable environment, because I just don't think it's realistic to make a judgment based on what we've seen. And the good stuff has been good. So I'm inclined to try to be optimistic and supportive.
Mm. Table currently looks a bit grim, I must admit, when you see that gap. I know there's a points deduction involved, and that is not what the owners signed up for. I suppose my gripe, Mikey, with Nuno has been starting lineups and substitutions, but I had that kind of with Steve Cooper, and as fans, we probably have that with any manager, but I've certainly got my doubts about it. Do you want to come back on anything Pete said before we move on?
Yeah, just a little bit. Made some good points, Pete, actually. I think all I'd say is, just to play devil's advocate and maybe nail my colours to the mast a little bit on the other side of the argument, is, you know, you talked about AFCON, and all I would say is everybody got affected by AFCON. Yes, we had the most amount of players out, but then you talk about VAR decisions. You know, we've seen loads this weekend. Wolves have had their fair share, but still sit mid-table. because they have a system and a style of playing and players that have played up to their promise and a manager that's tactically astute. I think with Nuno, we talked about the good victories. I think we've only won twice in the league this year, and it's almost May. And I appreciate we're a team that's struggling, and I get that. But I think my initial point around the upturn that we generally see, you look at Palace's manager, how he's come in, the impact he's had. I know it doesn't always work, but I was kind of expecting more. And I think that's where my head is. You look at the investment in the team that we've had. You look at the reasons that a lot of people wanted the change to be made with Steve Cooper, is to get that more progressive style, is to free up a Gibbs White and the rest of the team. But it hasn't really, other than, you know, the Fulham victory, West Ham victory, and those at the back end of last year, it's still the same old failings, which is kind of why we are where we are. So I absolutely understand your points, Pete. I think I'm probably slightly on the other end of the fence where I was just expecting more. And Matt, you said about the next three games won't define him. I genuinely think they will. Honestly, I do. I think if we go down, Nuno won't be here. And I think if we stay up, I think it's a toss of a coin. And I think it's a conversation that needs to be had. But at the moment, I'm less than impressed, I think, is my honest view.
Can I just add one more thing to that, Matt? I think Mikey's points are all perfectly reasonable, and I don't have a strong disagreement with any of them. Just to say, I'm really not a strong evangelist for this position that I've taken. I'm pretty 50-50, to be honest. But I think there are things that the club should aspire to be and things that we need the club to be in order to progress. And we're not going to get there with constant flux, constant change, and the way that we've been operating. And at some point, we'll have to try and be a bit different to that. And I just wonder whether maybe now is the time to start that. And also, just to pick up on in the chat, since it's a Q&A, Q&A session, there's a few really good points. I mean, Liam mentions that it costs an awful lot of money to change managers. And I think, by all accounts, Nuno and his staff are well remunerated. And I think that could be pretty problematic given the PSR situation. And just one other thing I want to mention, James makes a good point about the ownership needing to look closer at home at times. I don't think it's very often that people comment on things that I say and say that I've been too kind to the ownership. So I'm slightly surprised at that one, but he makes a really good point. You know, it's you can be unhappy as you want, and you can say that you're ambitious, but it sort of ties into my point about changing the way Forest do things. You're not going to get better results until the club is better organised and better run. And I think that is important. We need to be much smoother, much more consistent. We need to have much more sense of stability about us, because that's how you attract people, that's how you keep people, that's how you improve. So I think there's plenty to be said for that as well.
What was I saying? Oh yeah, I mean, I think what I was saying about Nuno and not being defined by the next three games is, I would hope that the ownership has decided. Made a decision already. If we stay up, then he's staying or he's going, because they've seen enough of him to know what he is, I think, is what I was angling at. And also, I think the AFCON thing was just a hangover, really, wasn't it? Because Aina came back injured, Bolly came back injured, and Sangare came back injured. And maybe if Sangare hadn't gone when he was actually in decent form before he went, we might have a slightly different player. And if we had Willy Bolly fit all season, then I don't think we'd be, you know, necessarily where we are. So yeah, that was just another mitigating factor. Let's move on. We're 30 minutes in, we've got loads of questions. We've only tackled three, so we're going to rattle through these a bit quicker. If we go down, this is James Bogue. If we were to go down, just quickly on this, chaps, because the clock's ticking, are we a shoo-in for immediate promotion? Obviously, we've seen Leicester come back up and Leeds and Southampton in the mix. Mikey, just briefly on that, would we bounce straight back?
I think we'd be top six. I don't think we're a shoo-in. I think it depends on who stays, who goes, obviously, and the coach we have. But you see that this pattern in recent seasons of the teams that have gone down being the ones pushing, you know, no more so than this season. So I don't expect us to be kind of mid-table or even further down than that. I think we'll be there or thereabouts. But shoo-in to go back up, no. I feel... I couldn't say that. You know, the last time we went down, somebody said to me in 99, oh, we'll be back up soon. 23 years. So and we went down after, you know, we went even further down. So not a shoo-in, but we will certainly be there or thereabouts, and then it's whether somebody can get us over the line. But it all depends on recruitment.
Yeah, the same for me. I don't think anyone's a shoo-in. I thought Leicester, because they should never have gone down last season, were probably the closest to it. But there's always good teams in the Championship. So just briefly, because I don't think we will go down, but thoughts on that one?
I can be very brief. We're absolutely not a shoo-in to come straight back up. Totally depends on the turnover of the squad. Totally depends on decisions taken from the hierarchy. And I think we're equally as likely to be one of those clubs that goes down and you say, oh gosh, the wheels have fallen off, as we are to keep the right players, do things smoothly and go straight back up.
Let's move on, because like I say, I don't think we are going down, and I won't be swayed on that just yet. But one thing that could sway us on it, Pete, is what happens at Sheffield United. Rich B and Steve Spencer both ask similar versions of the same question. Which version of the Reds do you think will turn up at Sheffield United on Saturday? They are ultra Jekyll and Hyde from one game to the next, Everton to Man City, particularly home and away. What do you think we're going to see at the weekend?
It's hard for me to answer that question with anything other than hope, I guess. I think we'll know within 5 or 10 minutes of kickoff what sort of team's turned up, because it seems that we start games with exactly the sort of intent that we're going to carry on with. And you can sort of see straight from the off, like you did against Man City, that the team's fired up, they've got a plan, and they look like they've all bought into it, and they're going about things with real positivity and intent. I'm very hopeful that we can see that again. It's obviously a different... challenge and a different type of game, but I think intent's always the most important thing. Whether that's intent to keep the ball and do that well and do it quickly, or whether it's intent to be organised and be as positive as you can about the way that you break up play, or whether it's countering with speed and efficiency, you need to go about everything with a real sense of the plan, everyone being involved and bought into it, and doing it with real positive intent. Like I said, so I'm pretty hopeful that we can do that. I mean, you don't have to pay much attention to that Man City game to see a team that has surely been able to take an awful lot of positives out of it. I mean, if they can't, then I don't really understand how the manager and coaching staff and everyone involved are involved at this level and having the sort of handsome monthly pay packets that they have. You know, they must be able to see the lessons to take from that and to build some confidence into the set of players and have them, you know, absolutely tearing into it at Bramall Lane. You know, you add together what we've just done in our last performance and the importance of the game and you know, the impact this moment could have if they pull a performance out of the bag. And it just really has to be there. The performance has to be there. You know, they're a team that are, I don't want to tempt fate, but they're tangibly worse than us. And if we can't go out there and, you know, look to play with real positivity, then I don't think we're worth a spot in the league.
Second part of the question, Mikey, was injured players notwithstanding, would you pick the same 11? What's your thoughts on that part?
I keep changing my mind, I'd never be honest with you. So I listened to the podcast yesterday, and I think it was Temps that made a compelling argument with going back to a 4, what we've been doing before, and it should have enough to beat Sheffield United over 100 minutes. But then the other side of my brain is thinking, I've not seen us play like we did against Man City for a long time, other than the Fulham half hour, where we were amazing. That was a plan that was executed perfectly. You know, the wing-backs got so much room on the ball. We looked fluid. We created so many chances. 15 shots on goal against Man City is unheard of. Absolutely unheard of. So half of me thinks, well, if you set up like that, you're going to match Sheffield United man for man, because that's pretty much what they play. And we are better all over the park than them. And if there's any sort of level that's similar to the level that we saw on Sunday, they'll beat them easy. So I'm flipping between the two. I think if it was now and you had to ask me, I think I'd probably stick, because how do you tell a team that's played like that to go back to a formation that, you know, we've won once in God knows how long? It's almost an easy team talk. Go out there, do it again, play to the same intensity levels, exactly what Pete says, on the front foot from minute one. You are better than these all over the park. You get that first goal, their heads will drop, and you're going to have myself and a few other thousand people behind that goal roaring them on. So I genuinely think they'll probably stay the same. they'll stay the same and they'll beat them every 100 minutes because they're better man for man all over the pitch.
I like the back three, Pete. I feel like it takes defensive onus off our fullbacks who are good at getting forwards. I quite like not seeing Montiel defend. I think he's better going forwards. And if Nico's back, which I don't think he will be, then I think it suits his game as well. And I think it probably suits, but it frees up Murillo to get on the ball. I like Bolly in a three because he's not the quickest. And I don't feel like, I think we can win the game without Gio Reyna. I don't think we need him as a 10, and Morgan can play as an 8. So I'm very happy sticking with what we saw on Sunday formation-wise. What about you on that one?
It's going to be my first, I don't know, of the stream, I think. I won't have an issue either way. If he goes back to his sort of most familiar formation and wants to give White higher at the pitch and to try and take the game to him in that sense, then I'll be fine with that. But I can totally understand the merits of sticking with it as it is. Like, I don't have the sort of tactical brain of the level required to really be assessing exactly how we sort of match up and whether it's the right call or not. I can see benefits to both moves, to be honest. So I just really don't have a strong view on that. I think for me, it's much more about the way we do it than what the actual formation is as well. I just really want to see strong mentality and a real tangible sense that they're going at it straight from the off, because we had that against both Fulham and Man City, and you saw the difference it made. You know, if you really get stuck in to the opposition from the start of the game, I just think it gives them nowhere to go. We too often give teams opportunities to build into games and to have moments against us, but we really are capable of blowing teams away. And if you get one against the Sheffield United side, then there's every chance you can get three or four. And can you imagine what that would do for confidence and momentum at this point? I think it'd be massive. I mean, just on the formation side of things, I think the injuries will potentially make the call. I'm not sure I'd stick with three at the back if Bolly's out. I don't know whether it would be worth bringing in Omobamadeli or whoever to stick with that personally. So I'd like to see where we're at with that, and that would probably be the decisive moment for me.
People in the comments mentioning the proliferation of our ex-players who play for them. Brereton, I think, is a really good player, and I'd actually like us to sign him. I think he's done well in a bad team. And Ahmed Odzic is a good good player, but I'm not particularly fearful of him. And I love Ben Osborne. I just think we've got better players. And Jack Robinson. I saw someone on the commentary say Jack Robinson's been their best player this season. And he was like just a steady championship left back at best for us. So, yeah, we have to go there and win and take it to them. And obviously points notwithstanding, it might be just enough to keep us safe. Right, in final 5 minutes or so, if anyone's got any questions in the live chat that you want to ask, feel free to drop them in. We'll do our best to tackle any. I've got two quick fire questions while we do that. One of them, Pete, was from, I think it's Matt Hoskins. I've written Mart here. Perhaps it is Mart Hoskins. If it's Matt or if it's Mark, thank you for the question. Who has been your player of the season, Pete Blackburn?
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy.
Chumba.
The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's a good question, isn't it? I mean, it's always harder to pick in these seasons where things have been a bit grisly, because you sometimes feel like you're scraping the barrel. But look, I think there are a few answers I could give. None of them I'm sort of absolutely nailed on with. I think for the story, I love Nico Williams, and I would give that a shout. I think his improvement has been massive. I think people were sleeping on him a little bit, and there are a lot of preconceptions about him not being able to do certain parts of the game. And he's absolutely nailed all of those. And I think he's, you know, right back to stay for us for, you know, the near and hopefully long-term future, whether that's playing a back four or in a more advanced role. And I love seeing that sort of progression from our players. You know, I always bang on about it, but I think we need to be that sort of football club that cherishes those sorts of younger footballers and tries to build their skills. So Nico would be a big shout for me. I think you can make a call on both Murillo and Gibbs-White for various different reasons, although I think there's a sense that Gibbs-White probably hasn't been at his best potential, but he's certainly been impactful for us in comparison to others. Elanga would have been, I think, pretty nailed on two or three months ago, but has probably had injury and tailed off a little bit. And I guess the other big one is probably Chris Wood, because, you know, without Chris Wood, I do not know what the state of things would be. And I think we'd probably be having a pretty depressing chat on the podcast right now about the state of next season and how we're going to cope with life in the Championship. So I think personally, Chris Wood's probably the right answer. But I'd like to give it to Nico, just a sort of personal crusade, because I'm his number one fan.
So for me, as we sit here right now, I would say Murillo, when you consider it's literally at the weekend, it was 12 months since he made his senior debut in Brazilian football, never mind English football. So to come over here and make the impact he has and show the quality he has, I think, you know, it's hard to look past him. Even though we've been so defensively bad, he's just the one constant in the centre of our defence. But if, as Pete says, if Chris Woods gets three goals in the next three games and we stay up, then I think it's probably even harder to look past him, because without Chris Wood, I think we would be going down. You know, we were right in the mire without Taiwo, and Chris Wood's really stepped up and been a hero. Obviously, he's missed four big chances in three games, and no one will be more fired up to put that right than him, I'm sure. So, yeah, that is to be confirmed, but between those two for me. Mikey, what about you?
Yeah, I'd say Murillo too. I think he's been fantastic, and you know, still got flaws in his game, of course, but like you said, for 21 coming over here, not speaking the language, I think he's been phenomenal. And some of the teams that have been linked with probably tells you what his ceiling is. I think he can do anything in the game, that lad. I think he's great. The other one for me is, and Pete touched on him as well, Elanga. So although he's had a quiet couple of months, when he's not in that Forest team, you know it, because we've not got that outlet, we've not got that explosive pace. And I'm not sure what I expected from him when he joined. Maybe a bench option, maybe somebody coming on and making that impact. But when he finally got in the team, that goal that he scored at Chelsea, and, you know, he finally got a run, he was our weapon, but almost taking over from Brennan. And I just hope he comes back up to speed in the next three games, because we're going to use him. And I think he's been a pleasant surprise. And I think you look at all the wingers that Manu have had, and have kept, that have cost significantly more, I think he's better than all of them. So I'm going to say Murillo and Elanga probably joint at the moment.
Go on, Pete.
I was just going to add, I mean, not strictly relevant to the question, but since we're talking about Elanga, I think he really could be definitive in the last few games of the season. But there's a sort of creeping change in his game that I think is causing him to not be as impactful as he was. He seems to be coming to the ball a lot more, drifting inside the pitch and sort of wanting to play in a sort of more creative number 10 type role a lot of the time. And I think he has hurt so many teams in the most brutal fashion by running away from the ball when a man who can slip him through has got it, and just causing absolute havoc in behind. And I really hope that they can get back to that sort of initial Elanga, who just really terrified teams in that way. I think he was just such a big goal threat. I think he could make just a massive difference at the end of the season if they can really get him back to that.
You're right, Pete. Newcastle away, that first goal, they terrorised him with his pace. West Ham, Vieira goal, when he broke down the left. Nobody can live with him. So, yeah, I'm with you. Get him wide, get him using his main asset because he can kill teams.
Yeah, the simpler his game is, the better. Like against Man City, he's coming in, he's drifting inside, he's running into traffic. Just, you know, run away from traffic and no one's going to catch you, right? So, yeah, I think that's the way to go with him. Last one before we go to any other quick questions. There was a question from Bruce. This is more aimed at Mikey because I want to ask him specifically about a certain player. Pete Blackburn, personal favourite Forest player of all time, just briefly.
Briefly, it's maybe a slightly controversial answer, but I think probably Pierre Van Hooijdonk, because my first really sort of tangible memories of Forrest are the 97-98 season and everything that he did on the pitch, which was just so magical. There was a home game against Middlesbrough where he was just absolutely unbelievable. And at the time, my junior school teacher was a Middlesbrough fan and everything just aligned, and it was just, you know, it's just a beautiful thing, and just seeing what he could do with football was absolutely majestic, and it has a real impact on you as a young player when you sort when you see that sort of magic. Plenty of others, you know, Chris Cohen and Stuart Pearce, who represent the club with just incredible dignity, and you really love them for everything they are, but yeah, for me, Van Hooijdonk just cast a real spell over me.
Who would think that would be the most controversial thing you would say after all the stuff that you put on Twitter and get flack for? Pierre Van Hooijdonk, very good. Just before I come to Mikey, if you haven't already, do us a favour, hit the like button. It does help more people see this, the more likes the video gets. So that would be a big help if you haven't, with 350 people watching us. Mikey, what's your answer?
Weirdly enough, it's the same. So it's Pierre Van Hooijdonk, and it probably tells you... my age as well, because I watched him in when I was at uni, and it's the first, when you move away from Nottingham, your love of the city and the club, I think, gets almost stronger. And I speak to a lot of people that don't live in Nottingham, and it's the highlight of their week or month coming to watch Forest because it's no longer on your doorstep. And when I went to uni, it was that team that Pete was on about. So I used to travel back at the weekend and start following him all over the country, and Van Hooijdonk and Campbell, and I remember that Borough game. That was great. He scored two free kicks, I think. What amazing! And he was great. And then when he left, it was like a dagger in the heart. And then you realise actually football is just a bit of a business. They're just trying to make as much money as they can. He had no loyalty to Nottingham Forest. It was a good thing for us, good thing for him, and he left in really awful circumstances. But he was the first one that I really sort of, you know, woke up on a Saturday morning really wanted to go and watch him. And Pete makes a good point as well. You know, some of the stewards that we've had in the past, some of the absolute gods of our football club, you know, your Coopers and your Chettles and your Stuart Pearce, Ian Wone, Steve Stone, all those guys, you know, you have to give them tippy hats as well. And the League One team, which I think is might be where you're going with this, Matt, the League One team, I really like watching horror movies, right? So when Forest got relegated, it was almost like a weekly horror movie that I used to go and watch them. And they were, at times, absolutely awful. And there were a few players in that team that I just couldn't really understand why they were playing for Forest. And there were a few, I'll name a few. There was Nicky Eden, right back, John Curtis, Gino Padula, you know, all the greats. And you're watching them thinking, come on. Casting your mind back as well to what I've just said around the team that went up and some of the great teams in the past, and looking at the total difference between the two. So from a sort of sadistic point of view, I did like that League One team because I thought it was just bonkers and I just couldn't understand it. But actually, my true love was probably those teams that sort of bounced up and down in the 90s, both of them, the ones with Colly Moran and obviously the ones with Van Hooijdonk.
I'll tell mine in a minute. We'll just put a few names up. Richard Ottaway says Des Walker or Little. I assume Des Walker. Stan Collymore there as well. And a few people, of course, saying John Robertson, which is a generational thing. I guess cause it's the ones you've seen, isn't it? Like Chris Urban says Andy Reid. And I think mine, I loved watching Andy Reid. It was when I used to watch Forest most regularly as a fan. So as a young kid, it was Colly Moore because he played the way you wanted to play on the park, just absolutely running through everyone and smashing it in. Then it would be Andy Reid. Yeah, that kind of team. Chris Cohen was another one I enjoyed. And Ian Wone, just for his left foot, you know, smashing in from distance all the time. But Colly Moore, for me as a young kid, would be the one, just so I was getting into football. Right, before we finish, there was one other question that we'll tackle. Also, Mark Smith asked about safe standing. I'll ask Greg about that on Thursday, because I know Forza have done more research into it. And I think Greg's been to Celtic Park and stuff like that. So he's probably best place to talk about it. The other one, which I'm just struggling to find, but I know what the question was asking. It was Greg Orwell and asking about the tweet that the Premier League put out when Sheffield United got relegated. Twitter up in arms because it said subject to points deductions. I think the question was, what do we read into it? I read absolutely naff all into it. I just think it's some Premier League admin or Premier League person covering their ass by saying, you know, it's potentially subject to this. I don't think it's any indication of points deductions. The Premier League don't know at that point. I very much doubt they know the results. Everton haven't even had their appeal confirmed yet. So I just think it's people seeing things that aren't there, and we'll find out more this week. Pete was shaking his head. Did you want to come in, Pete?
Just to say there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It was a factual tweet that explained the situation, that the state of the league is still subject to two appeal hearings. You know, the wording might not have been great, but actually the reaction tells you more about things than the tweet itself. People just need to chill out a bit. You know, I understand they've now deleted it, but the reason they've deleted it is because there was a massive pile-on, because everyone is a little bit mad at the moment. You know, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. There's no conspiracy. They're not telling us that they're going to take loads of points off us. It's just a factual statement that perhaps they would have been wise not to release into the maelstrom that is social media.
Yeah. Chill out, everyone. That's it. Let's wait and see what happens with this points deduction. I don't think we're going down. I think we're going to be fine. And then we can talk about next season. Right, just before I thank the chaps and go to any other business, as I said earlier, do us a favour, hit like and subscribe. It would be a great big help, and give us a good review on iTunes. I enjoy reading them all. The most recent review was just about VAR, not about the podcast, but that's all fine, because they put 5 stars on it, so I don't really mind that at all. Right, any other business, Mikey Clark?
I do. You know, sometimes mine are a bit random.
Yes.
So, without wishing to sound like Martin Luther King, I had a dream last night. I'm going to tell you what it was. We won 3-1 at Sheffield United on Saturday. And I never dream about Forest, but when I do, it usually comes to fruition pretty much. So I'm going to lump some money on 3-1. And I also, the second part of the dream was about this podcast. And we stayed up. And you know what they do in TV shows sometimes when they want to create something a little bit different. They have like a musical thing. We had a little sing song in a band, and I was on the cello, Fletch was on the keyboards, and you were singing that, and you were singing Massive Attack song. So what I was going to ask you is, if we stay up,
no,
and are you going to give the fans a little sing song to celebrate the fact we stayed up, and especially if we win 3-1, as I've just predicted?
No, I'm literally the worst singer in the world. I mean, God, I keep a close eye on our listening figures. They would absolutely plummet after that. So, no, definitely not. I think I've offended our older listeners as well by saying it's a generational thing, which player you're the biggest fan of. That was not my intention. So, yeah, I'm definitely not singing. Sorry, Jez. Kevin asked on what basis I think we're not going down, because the three teams below us are absolutely horrific. Even if Burnley are picking up, I'm still yet to be convinced by them. So I think we'll be all right. Especially if we get a point back, I think we'll win on Saturday, and then we should be okay. Pete, anything else from you before we go?
Yeah, could I just propose that we take the podcast back a few minutes, and when you asked me for my favourite Forest player of all time, I actually said David Prusser. Just in case he's listening.
I think he does listen, weirdly. I don't know if he listens all the time or just before he comes on for a bit of research, but I'll just clip that and send it to him, Pete. Don't worry. Right, the only thing for me, if people indulge me, I always talk about membership and I never say what you actually get from membership. So someone said I'd be a terrible salesman, so I'll try and sell membership to you briefly. So basically, it's the best way to support us to let me keep doing this 6 days a week, because it is a massive help. There's two tiers. $2.99 a month gets you a membership badge, access to the membership community tab, which I'm in quite a lot, early access to recorded interviews, and early access to live show tickets. And then for a couple of extra pounds a month, for $4.99 a month, you get all that. But we'll also do a couple of members only live streams. That's with one of us, and a channel member comes on and joins us to give their views on Forest as well. So, and also there'll be an audio version coming in the summer, I should say, because people ask me about that as well. So I do kind of constantly plug membership and then never tell you what you get. But that's roughly what you get. So yeah, appreciate all the support. Pete's a much better salesman than me for membership. But hopefully I've done you close to proud there, Pete.
You have. I mean, I can just add very, very quickly. Look, I think everyone knows who is involved in this through being a contributor or listening to things or watching live streams or has been at the live events. Everyone knows what a special thing this has become. For me, it's an absolute pleasure to be involved and meeting everyone who's contributing and then being at that live event where I met so many really lovely people. And, you know, we could all do with a little bit more community in our lives and a little bit more of that sense of bringing each other together and having a sort of real shared experience and something that we can enjoy even when it's difficult. But, you know, it's not easy for this to happen. This is Matt's actual job now. And I, for one, would really like it to stay that way, both as a listener, as a member, and as a contributor. So if you can, times are tough and we all appreciate that, but if you can, do support.
God, so much better than me at that. Bloody hell, Pete. Well done.
You are good, Peter. For $5.99, everyone, Matt sends you a Muse song every month as well. So that's another level you can go song. To. Yeah, you love it, yeah? Isn't that your thing?
Muse? No, yeah. That was when we were picking out the intro music, which I really hate, by the way. I've come to really hate the intro music for this podcast, so I might change it in the summer. It just gets stuck in my head. And you said one of them sounds like a Muse song, and I said, what's wrong with that?
I thought that meant you liked it. Oh, fair enough.
I don't mind Muse. They're all right. They're all right. But I wouldn't be my favourite. Right. Thanks very much, everyone, for your company today. Good to have you with us for an hour or so. Back tomorrow with TNT sports commentator Adam Summerton. Spoke to him already. So do give that a listen if you can. And then back on Thursday with our match preview. Right. Liam says, get Pete in the dressing room. I dread to think what you'd say in the dressing room, Pete. But thank you very much for your time, Pete Blackburn.
Absolute pleasure. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Good man. Good man. Thanks for doing it up there in Scotland. Mikey Clark, thank you for your time.
Yeah, brilliant. Pleasure. Thanks for chatting, guys.
Have a good day, everyone. And as ever, we shall see you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.